la religion.
Welcome to You, Me, Empathy. Thank you for listening. We would like to remind you that this podcast is for informational and entertainment purposes only, and is not a substitute for medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Known as just a silly boy with a feely heart. Please consider supporting the show. Check us out on Patreon or simply leave a review on iTunes. Here's your host and creator of the show, Known Wells.
Hello, feely humans. Welcome to another episode of You, Me, Empathy. This is episode 113 on Looking for Beauty Amid the Pain with my guest, Katie Huey. In this episode, we talk about saying yes to things we actually want to say yes to, moving through the world at our own pace, why grief isn't contagious, and so much more. Give Katie a follow at 52beautifulthings on Instagram and check out her beautiful blog, 52beautifulthings.com. Before we get to the episode, though, I wanted to remind you, you guys, today is January 27th, and we've got a little over a month left in the Feely Human Collective crowdfunding campaign. And if you haven't supported it, please do. It would mean the world to me. This effort, this mental health collaborative community is something I believe in deeply, and I think you will too. If you can check it out, you just have to go to Feely Humans, plural, feelyhumans.co, and that will redirect you to the Indiegogo campaign where you can watch the video of why I started the Feely Human Collective and what all the phases mean, phases 1, 2, and 3, and there are amazing rewards such as, you know, lovely, cute, adorable Feely Human stickers and shirts and enamel pins and even a reward where you come out and stay at our Cottage of Whimsy and we record a podcast or do whatever. We go on adventures, snuggle doggos, play with horses, whatever. So please check that out. Please, please, please. Again, that's on Indiegogo. It's crowdfunding now. It's going to be over, and I would really appreciate your support. And if you can't support it financially, that's okay. I totally understand, of course. Please share. Please share it far and wide. If it stirs your heart, please share. And I hope you're not getting annoyed with all of the promo on this Feely Human Collective crowdfunding campaign. It's just because it means the world to me, and I need to keep talking about it because I want it to be successful. And so thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much. Go to feelyhumans.co and check that out and let me know what you think about it. Okay. Let's get to the episode. Again, this is episode 113 on Looking for Beauty Amid the Pain with Katie Huey. Welcome to You, Me, Empathy, a podcast about exploring the struggles we face in our day-to-day lives as humans trying to get by on this wondrous and overwhelming pale blue dot. The intent of You, Me, Empathy is to talk openly, without judgment, about our mental health, our neuroses, our shared anxieties and worries, to create a dialogue that is vulnerable and deeply human and empathetic, and to share that dialogue with others to inspire emotional and cognitive collaboration and insight, so we can, hand in hand, break down the stigma that make us feel shame and guilt for struggling, for feeling our feelings, for being feely humans. You, Me, Empathy is a safe, friendly space designed to inspire the beauty in each of us. Today, it's a beautiful day in the neighborhood to be chatting with writer, seeker, and curator of beautiful things, Katie Huey. Hello, Katie.
Hi there.
How's it going?
It's great. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well. I'm excited to This is the first time we've ever contacted, ever engaged, and I'm excited to talk about all things beauty and your story and all that loveliness.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Of course. Of course. Thanks for reaching out. I appreciate when people reach out. It makes it easy for me because I don't have to do the legwork of finding guests.
Yes, the internet is a powerful thing.
It is indeed. Well, before we get into your story, Katie, let's just do an emotional check-in. How's your week been, and how are you feeling?
My week has been pretty good overall. I've got a little bit of a cold, which always knocks me down about half a point or so. But I figure of all the spaces to show up and say, this is who I am on a podcast, this is probably the best one. So please forgive me if a little frog shows up with me as well.
There's no need to be sorry. We love frogs here on the UMMP podcast.
Good. We can croak along together.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a good week coming off of some time in the mountains. So that's always refreshing and fills me up a little bit.
Right. I hear that. I'm very much filled up by nature. Are you, like, in Colorado, are you pretty close to mountains?
We are about an hour and a half from big mountains, and mm-hmm. then we're tucked right into the Front Range, so we can drive, 20 minutes and get up a canyon if we want to.
Nice. And are you a hiker, runner, camper?
I say that I am a moderate Coloradoan.
Okay.
I enjoy being outside and hiking and skiing and being by the river, but I'm certainly not extreme. In fact, I did my first 14er at the age of 29 last year. So, okay. Definitely exposure, but I'm not hardcore like many of the people that live here.
Sure. And have you always lived in Colorado?
For most of my life, yeah. I say that I keep coming back. I had a brief stint in Washington and then have kind of bounced along the Front Range.
All right. Nice.
Yeah.
I love the state of Colorado. In my 20s, before I met my partner, I did a lot of traveling around in my car and in fact, kind of lived out of my car for a little bit. And driving through Colorado is just so stunning. But there was one time I was driving through, I think it was Eagle County.
Sure. I don't
know is that right? Is that
yep.
a thing? Okay.
That's a thing.
And I was, at the time, I had a little pickup truck that was very front heavy, and I hit a snowstorm, and I nearly careened off a cliff.
Oh, gosh.
That was terrifying.
That is terrifying.
So I, managed to find a place and bought some sandbags, which I used to then kind of even out. I put them in the bed of my truck to kind of even out, and then had to wait for the snowstorm to pass and then kind of kept going. But nonetheless, Colorado, its beauty almost killed me, I should say.
It'll keep you on your toes, that's for sure.
Yeah, indeed, indeed. Well, so happy to have you here. Well, let's jump into your story, Katie. You're doing work and sort of exploring the beauty in the world, and I want to get into that, but I first want to kind of understand your origins a bit.
Sure.
So tell me a little bit about what your childhood was like. Let's start there. Well, give me some snapshots from your childhood.
I grew up in kind of a normal on paper family. I have one younger brother, and my parents raised us together. We had a lot of time, around the kitchen table. And my dad was actually a minister when I was an early elementary kiddo. And I think we got to spend time in the outdoors and really had opportunities for my creativity to be fostered. I definitely found comfort and solace in school and kind of probably started compensating for other things just in an achievement-oriented world, but I really thrived in academia.
Hmm.
I have lots of memories just playing outside in our backyard. I think my parents really valued downtime, which I really appreciate.
That's great.
And I just have this memory right now of we got the line a lot of only the boring get bored.
My mom gave me that as well.
Yeah. I think we're really encouraged to find ways to use our time well.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of what's on the top of my brain.
Yeah, no, that I love that. Is that, do you feel like that sort of ethos still kind of lives with you today?
The only the boring are bored.
Yeah, using your time, like, you know, being creative with your time and not, you know, I guess needing the permission or the go-ahead to just kind of use the space that you have in front of you.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's a lot of choices and a lot of demands. And I think as I've gotten older, I've really started to tune into what do I actually want. And even last week, had someone say and remind me, you know, we say yes to the things we don't want to and no to the things we do. And so I'm really working on how can I shift that mindset.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah. But I also think I married an introvert, and we spend a lot of time kind of in, I guess, more introverted activities, writing and music and tinkering and doing art and being in nature. So that's kind of the philosophy that I got from moving forward. We don't have to move through the world so fast, which is pretty countercultural.
It is. So you're an introvert?
I would identify, yes, very much.
I very much, as an introvert and as someone who's very sensitive, I'm wondering if you can relate to this. I get very, very upset, very kind of worn, tired, and have, you know, at this stage in my life, no patience for the kind of obsession with go, 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 the obsession with productivity and getting things done and checking boxes. And, like, you know, I just, you know, I've realized I have to go at my own pace and no one else's.
Yeah. I'd say you're probably maybe a baby step ahead of me. I think I'm really working on shifting towards that. And, I have good friends and mentors who keep telling me, like, you have all the time you need. And, that's a really helpful grounding reminder when I'm feeling like I'm behind or comparing too much to other people's journeys. It is exhausting. And I think the other question with that is, like, well, according to who? Like, whose boxes am I checking?
Whose
timeline am I on? So it's a great reminder just that I have all the time I need, even if it feels like I'm maybe behind in areas.
When you're feeling, you know, behind and kind of in the compare-y space, like, where does your head go? Like, what are you thinking about emotionally? Are you stressed? Are you, like, tell me about that.
I think I move into problem solving mode. You know, and I think it was worse in my early 20s, but just this idea that you need to find your passion and be on your path. And if you're not, something's wrong with you. And I really link that to career. And I had 9 jobs in my 20s. And I'm realizing maybe job hopping isn't really the answer that I need. but again, I have other wise people that remind me, like, just sit down. Sometimes we don't need action in our heads or physically. So when my brain starts swirling or ruminating, I try to remind myself, like, just tell it to sit down. You can get up in a minute.
I love that. And there's so much, I feel like there's so much more going on and so much more fruitful sort of action in the stillness, right? Like, there's so much outwardly, like, look at me in the sort of external sort of action, but there's a lot more just personal, beautiful, like, to our heart core action in the stillness when we can kind of really sit with those thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
How old are you, Katie?
I'm 30.
Okay. So what do you do day to day and for a job?
My day job, I work at a consulting firm that works with purpose-based business. So companies that believe they can make more of an impact than just profit.
Nice.
And I do operations, so a lot of behind-the-scenes support for our advisors.
Uh-huh.
And then I also work for an author who lives in Colorado, and then kind of do some side hustle things as well. So, you know, going back to our earlier conversation about you have choices and priorities where you put your time. I'm balancing how much do I invest in others' projects and how much do I invest in my own.
Yeah. And the work you're doing with like 52 Beautiful Things, for instance, is that something, is your goal to just do that full time?
My goal with that is to turn it into a book. I would love to be published and I think share my observations that like we don't have to move so fast. I've always been a sensitive person. I think I really connect with you there. And what has helped me cope through living in this kind of chaotic, crazy world is really slowing down and encouraging people to look for the good in the midst of pain. And so that's what informed my blog when I started it 6 years ago. I, you know, you talk about dreaming about a business, and I think there's a lot of ways that we can share that message with the world, but I'm still very much in the preliminary stages.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Can you tell me how 52 Beautiful Things started? And because I know you've had a loss in your life. Can you tell me about like sort of the core of why the project started for you?
Yeah. I actually started the project back in 2013. I was newly engaged and we had just postponed our wedding because my grandfather had passed away. And my fiance had lost his job and I needed something to kind of just keep me on track saying it's not all bad out there. So I started, just a weekly blog with reflections on beautiful things in an imperfect world. And I did pretty well about, you know, my weekly reflections. And then in 2016, my dad passed away completely unexpectedly. And the month after that, my husband lost his job. And then the month after that, I was let go from a position as well. So a lot of our stability and security went out the window. And then you pour grief on top of that. And so through all of that, I kept writing and really searching and reflecting and asking a lot of questions. And I really came to this place of you can be hurting and searching and healing. And throughout this whole journey, there are beautiful things all around us, whether it's flour, you know, spattered on a countertop, or a friend bringing you an Easter ham, or your toes in a bowl of cold water. I mean, it's just really informed my gratitude practice and my grieving practice as well.
How did your father die?
It was unexpectedly. He had a heart attack.
How old was he?
58.
Wow. So young.
Yeah.
I'm very sorry.
Thank you.
That's, you know, not to make this about me, but I have complicated relationships with my parents, and I, as we do as humans, I sometimes kind of like my imaginative sort of wandery brain, anxiety brain, you know, sometimes goes to places thinking about like, oh, what if they died? You know, how will that, what will that look like? And the truth is I don't know, you know, and so to you, Katie, what, when that happened, what was going on in your brain? What, how did you, what was your initial reaction? What was your emotional process like immediately after that?
You know, when death is really unexpected, I think the first emotional reaction is just shock. And you absorb the shock waves in very different ways. We were lucky in the fact that I have extended family in the area. Like, my dad was pretty well known in the community. We had a lot of support right away. And I know that's not the case for everyone. I think, you know, going back to your question about my childhood, we also were a very emotive family. I sometimes joke that we emote until we're blue in the face.
Wow. So that was like an encouraged superpower.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I'd like to see it that way. Yes.
That's great.
So I think all of that pre-work really informed. I never felt afraid to share my feelings. And I think, you know, over the course of the months that followed too, we just kind of kept getting hit with these blows. And so there was this balance of course, desperation, anger, and sadness, and survival instinct that, you know, we needed money, we needed to utilize our support network. And a weird blessing out of all of that was, because both my husband and I were unemployed, we had a lot of time to be together, to be with my mom, to be with my brother. And we kind of, now I can look back and say, yeah, that was the season where we sat and stared at walls because we didn't know what else to do.
Right.
And it was awful at the time, but I think looking back, it was also a gift having to get up and go to work and, you know, try to function that way would have been a different challenge. But then I still had to like look for work, but
sure,
that worked out.
Did it bring you closer to your family and your husband?
That's an interesting question. I wouldn't say it was significantly different. I think it's actually one of the weird things about grief in families is everyone's experiencing the loss so differently, even though it's the same person.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't say it was making us closer, but it certainly brought our different dynamics to light. And I think I felt supported, but we were all reeling with the experience such different ways.
A support during that time is huge. I mean, that's number one.
Death makes people super uncomfortable.
Right. How did your mother cope?
You know, it's a funny question. Sometimes I joke with people that that's one that's tricky to answer, but she,
just from your perspective,
she did not do well to, but I'm very, very proud of her through her transformation. And I'm just judging in my brain, how comfortable would she be with me sharing her story? Think she lost her best friend. And she lost her partner and she lost a financial provider. And when that happens, people expect you to move on much quicker than is expected. And I think she would be okay with me saying she went through a pretty nasty transformation.
Yeah. I mean, anyone would.
Right.
You know, that's brutal. I mean, that's, you know, losing your best friend. That's what it is. It's losing your best friend. And, you know, I can't imagine going on in the world, you know, after I lost my partner in life. Like, that's, I can't even reconcile that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, so you being this person who's trying to create this beautiful project that's focusing on the sort of the beauty in life, and there's so much beauty in life. There is so much beauty, but there's also so much pain. Like, how do you specifically reconcile those two things? Like, how do you make room for them?
That's a beautiful question. I think I'm coming to this place where there really can be both. And it has to be a conscious effort. I think our culture too there's kind of two stories we tell ourselves, right? Like, we either power through and move on and move forward, or we take time and sit in our pain and we process and we wallow. And I think I'm realizing, like, it's not an either or. A lot of times for me, I'm moving forward and I'm sad. I also have this new soapbox of like, grief is not contagious. And I'm 3 years out now. And I think people are still uncomfortable in approaching me, in assessing, you know, where is she at? How is she feeling? How can I support her? So I feel this almost defensiveness of saying, like, I'm laughing and I'm sad at the same time. And that's okay. And it's not always as heavy or present as it is at other times. So, you know, you asked the question, how do you carve out space? I think it's a very real picturing of what do you want to put in your heart? Mm-hmm. And that's a spiritual thing for me, but also what's around you? How can you get the support you need? And one of the most favorite pieces of advice someone gave me in approaching my grief was find comfort. Which, what are you doing to find comfort? And I thought, that's something that I can take control of for myself when a lot of things feel very, very out of control.
Yeah. What is your comfort?
So I'm a vanilla latte addict. but, you know, beverages in warm cups brought a lot of comfort. If I was feeling up to it, would go to yoga classes. Sometimes it was fun socks I would pick out. Having people I knew I could talk to on speed dial. And sometimes it was like choosing an extra soft scarf that day. So it looks different, but in a very similar way of making a gratitude list, it was making a list of what can make me feel a little bit better when I know I don't feel very good at all.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah.
You said a very important thing I want to go back to for a second. The fact that the beauty and the pain are coexisting, right? Mm-hmm. Co-occurring things. And I think that is such an important lesson in that you're right. Like, it's like a yin and yang, right? I that's how I truly feel about life. Like, life is ebbs and flows. It's peaks and valleys. It's ups and downs. You know, sometimes we move forward. Sometimes we go back. And it's not linear. It's just what it is. It's just day to day how it goes. And I think there are times that we do need to sit with it. And there are times that we need to not think about it for a day, you know, and that's okay too. And I think the sooner we as humans, when it comes to our recovery, when it comes to our healing and connecting with the earth and other humans and, you know, our gods or whatever, like it, I think it's important that we recognize that there isn't one right or wrong way, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's no manual.
Yeah. How do you, you know, I know you're someone who believes in a higher power. How does that come into your healing space when it comes to processing grief and your own mental health? How does God play a role in that?
That's a good question too. I think, let's see where to start. I definitely grew up with a very Christian foundation. I had a lot of questions about faith and I still do. I think I've always kind of said that I sit on a fence. Like, I know stories and or what some people call ultimate truth, and I can talk the talk. But I also have one foot in the other world where I see how much people are hurting and the chaos that we inflict upon ourselves and upon others. And I guess, so I kind of sit in this fence of like, it doesn't make sense for me to walk through the world without God. And I'm not sure about the doctrine that leads so much of our choices. But for me, especially through losing my dad, I think I came back to a lot of what I knew or was taught because it brought a lot of comfort. And I think ultimately for me, God is very, very mysterious. I think we as humans can't really begin to fathom that spiritual connection. Mm. And I believe love is really important for myself, for others, for the earth. And if I have to go through tough things, and I know there will be more down the road, I'd rather do it with a higher power than without. Mm. But I don't feel responsible for saving souls or, sharing a certain message. I more want to be conscious of how are we treating one another, and is that a reflection of the person that I believe God created me to be?
Mm. Yeah, that's beautiful. I always think about something Aaron Smith, a guest on the show, many episodes ago. He considers himself a Christian, and he's a former youth like pastor. Mm-hmm. And he said something that I just love. He said, "It's not about what is right or wrong. It's about what is love," mm-hmm. which I just I cherish so much. And someone, so for you and maybe some of the listeners who don't know, Katie, I was raised in a Christian household, and I no longer consider myself as a Christian. And I think some of that is being raised in a sort of version of Christianity that was inhumane, and that was demeaning and diminishing and prejudiced and not about love and not about equality and not about connecting with other humans, but about divisiveness and hurt. And I couldn't keep sort of living in that. That was like, that just didn't connect with me.
Yep.
And so I wonder for you, like, what was the brand of Christianity you were raised in, and what, and in addition to that, like, who are some of your people, inspirational? And I guess I'm putting on Christian. I don't know if you even said that. I don't know if you consider yourself a Christian or not, but I'm wondering also, like, the some of your sort of heroes in the world now that are doing, in your mind, spirituality and sort of a belief in a higher power, a good sort of service and a good, they're doing it right. Sorry, that's sure. Rambly.
That's a big question. No, that's okay. I would say I was raised in an evangelical covenant church. My dad was an evangelical minister until I was 8. And then my parents both participated in church ministry, children's ministry. So I grew up going, kind of in that evangelical world. However, I think my faith really developed and changed, as did my parents, when they left the church. I would say both of my parents were spiritual seekers and really continued to balance a deep, deep desire for spiritual connection and love with a higher power with the very human elements of church politics. And I think anytime you're in a religious institution, you have to remember that people are making decisions, and your point of divisive and it sounds like maybe the environment you were in was much more extreme than the one that I grew up in. But I think when I was in high school, my mom went back to school and just started exploring feminine spirituality, and my dad did a lot of research on Buddhism. So even though my roots are very much in the Jesus story, I think my family did a great job of exploring other ways of connecting to spiritual powers in the world. Mm.
That's very healthy.
I think so. You know, and you asked if I take on the title Christian, and I'll share a little story. One of the churches that we go to kind of has this metaphor of explaining the different denominations that I thought was really powerful. And so imagine a target. In the first, you know, the middle ring is you believe that Jesus is the Savior and the truth and the light and the only way to connect with God. The next concentric circle is interpretation. So you and I might read a Bible verse and you might read it one way and I might read it one way and we interpret that and then apply it in our lives in different contexts. And then the outer circle is preference. And it's really not related to doctrine or interpretation, but more about what do we prefer as a congregation. And I remember sitting in this meeting thinking that is an amazingly powerful way to understand the differences that we have in different denominations. And where I sit and am problematic with taking on that Christian title is I'm not sure I fully 100% agree that Jesus is the only way to experience God. So, I believe in Jesus. I'm not sure I am fully Christian, but I have a lot of questions.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of where I sit right now.
Yeah. Who are some of your people you look up to? Yeah.
I really love Anne Lamott.
Oh yeah.
Let's see. I think Brené Brown's doing really wonderful work. I really love women's stories. Who else is really informing my stuff right now? I just read Rebecca Mackay's work. I think that's how you say her last name. The Great Believers.
Okay.
Have you read that one?
No, I haven't.
It's about the gay community in the 80s after the AIDS epidemic breaks out, but she does such a beautiful job of weaving a story that says we're all just doing the best we can. You know, when we're searching for love and for hope. And I'm not sure that's necessarily a spiritual perspective. I read a lot of Richard Rohr's stuff too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So.
I love that. Yeah. I mean, you know, it makes me, hearing you speak about it gives me hope, honestly, because I was raised in, to use your word, a very... much more sort of extreme version, you know, like where, you know, things like homosexuality was a sin and, you mm-hmm. know, having sex before marriage was a sin. And, you know, if you masturbate, you're going to hell. Like these sorts of I find very, inhumane and abusive practices mm-hmm. were commonplace. And that's kind of the world that I was in. And I just kind of existed in it for a while mm-hmm. and seeing people like yourself experience spirituality and sort of God as this more heart-leading and progressive and, you know, we're all in this together perspective is what it's all about. Like, I feel like I don't use the word spiritual to call myself anything. I don't use that word for myself, but I believe that we as humans should connect with one another and grow with one another and recognize the perspective that we are truly all in this together, and we should try to make the world a better place through love and empathy and compassion and vulnerability and meeting people where they are and seeing that in certain, you know, quote unquote religious contexts. Like, it's such, that gives me so much joy.
Good. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think I agree with you. And that being said, finding community under a religious context is challenged for us, us being me and my husband, but that's okay. Cause I think the other side of that is how do you have grace and compassion for people in those conservative worlds? And I don't have an answer to that.
Yeah.
it's a little harder for me, but
yeah, don't go on Facebook.
Well, yeah.
It's hard. Lately I've been feeling like I'm being trolled by my own mother on Facebook. Sharing, you know, genuinely like here's a way that we can be better humans, and her basically saying this is disgusting hate. So it's you can't, there's nowhere to go with that.
Well, I mean, another way to think about it is every radical person in history had big new ideas, and I think the work that you're doing is pretty radical in our history. So take comfort, you know. It's hard, especially with the people you love. People didn't love Gandhi. People didn't love Jesus. People didn't love Mother Teresa, you know. Yeah.
No, that's very sweet of you to say that. Thank you. So tell me and the listeners a bit more about how 52 Beautiful Things works.
How it works.
Yeah, how it works and what it is. Because, you know, I mean, we have the general sort of conceit of it, but like what are you hoping for people to get out of it? What are you hoping to inspire in people and evoke in people's hearts?
Well, you know, for a long time I was writing every Tuesday night about just something good or beautiful that was happening in my life. I think for me, I was kind of selfishly writing it for myself, as a grounding exercise, as an opportunity to reflect on what I encountered. And I think after my loss, it got a little bit richer in terms of just helping me cope. I think there's always this tension between, am I creating for others or am I creating for myself? And I hope that it resonates with others. And I go back and forth. But I guess what I want people to walk away with is that we as humans are really complex. And we have choices in the way we walk through the world. How can we shift our lens to understand that there are horrendous things happening this very minute? And at the same time, babies are being born and cookies are being made. And I don't know, gardens are growing. And I really, you know, sometimes I get insecure. Is my search naive or selfish or...
am I just being like
flat out wrong?
Positive all the time, right? You know,
and I think that's not where I sit. I have an immense connection for other people's suffering, and I think I've been given the gift of seeing people, and I just want people to be seen as humans who are dynamic and full and hurting and growing and laughing. You know, we just all have so much potential to care for one another. And I believe, too, that really starts for caring for ourselves. And I think caring for ourselves is a radical act in a culture that wants us to move so quickly and accomplish things. So if readers read my stuff and can take it away, it's how do we balance our pain with our potential and that they're not mutually exclusive? And also just be really grateful for the little things that surround us every day.
Yeah, I like that. And I think that I'm grateful that you're mindful of and you're sensitive to the not wanting to, like feeling torn at times between, am I creating this for myself? Am I creating this for others? I feel that way with this podcast sometimes. And I think there is a lot online that is radical positivity all the time. Get through it. You know, like, look up, you know, like, you'll choose happiness, you know. And I bristle at that stuff a bit.
Yeah.
You know, and I think what you're doing is obviously just a bit more reflective of reality that We as humans contain multitudes, pain and sorrow and joy and beauty at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's unrealistic and not self-serving to just move through and force yourself to be happy. It does, like, what? I don't even know what that looks like.
Well, it looks like compartmentalizing. Yeah, it looks like shoving things down and not looking at our emotions, not doing the emotional inward looking that we all have to do.
Right.
So to understand what's going on.
Right.
The guideposts, you know. Can you give me a couple examples of like some recent beautiful things you've explored on your blog?
Well, the last post that I wrote that was certainly a little bit more silly was an ode to a BLT sandwich. Just kind of the joy of the process of making that, consuming it, experiencing that on a hot summer day.
I like that.
But I also get more serious and talk about, you know, the ache of an empty seat at a Nutcracker performance. You know, wishing my dad was sitting next to me, or I also did a Mother's Day post about the lines that my grandmother commonly says and how they've shown up and shaped me and led me to where I am now.
Oh, that's beautiful.
I'm gonna pull it up here and look. I have to admit, this year I haven't been as regular in posting.
Why do you think that is?
I think I'm getting ready to compile it and put it into a book. And so each week I'm like, is this the last one? Is this the last one? I don't know.
And do you plan
sometimes on- I write poetry. Sometimes I write about Father's Day triggers. I mean, a lot of the posts vary.
Yeah. As far as like the book sort of goal, are you just planning on pitching that to like a traditional publisher? What's your plan there?
I am considering pursuing the self-publishing route at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I have a mentor that's really been helping me too. I'm not opposed to traditional publishing. I think you asked that question about limiting beliefs earlier too. And just knowing trends about the publishing industry, you know, they want you to have big platforms on Instagram and big followings. And if publishers are listening and agents are here, I'm willing to talk to you. but I think just learning, also a blog to book is a really kind of new genre that people are exploring. And so sometimes publishers feel it's a little bit experimental, but
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
A couple of things, I wanted to share a couple of recent beautiful things, that I've witnessed.
Yeah.
So we live in an area that's, I'm in Orange County, which everyone can have like the view of Orange County as being this kind of rich, white, you know, bland, and it's certainly that in pockets. But we're in a pocket that's old and weird and rural, and we have a great backyard, and I can grow, you know, all types of vegetables. And so recently we've been growing tomatoes, and I was able to pick a few, and I don't really eat tomatoes that much because of them being nightshades and them nightshades having issues on my tum-tum. But they're just so, I did have one, and it was just so sweet, and I love the smell of homegrown vegetables. There's nothing.
Isn't it amazing?
There's nothing better. It just makes me so happy. The other aspect of living where we're at is birds galore. And so we've had baby doves that have, you know, born and hatched and have gone and moved on. And right now we have a couple of, I think two or three baby orioles in our yard with a little mama oriole. And it's just precious. It makes me happy.
Mm-hmm. See, nature just keeps happening. I love it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Despite the odds, right? Yeah.
The other thing I wanted to mention in regards to beautiful things, and it's a hope. It's kind of like a grounding hope, is I've had lots of chronic issues, physical pain and stomach issues and inflammation issues my whole life. And I've always sort of gone to doctors, and the end result usually is like the doctor essentially telling me, sorry, we can't help you. Mm. And I've experienced that my whole life in a lot of ways. I have just a long history of being disappointed by doctors and like being frustrated and then going into hiding, essentially. But like, sure, screw this system. I am not seeking any guidance from Western medicine. And I'm back on the train, but I've been seeing a naturopath.
Yep.
An integrative medicine who's kind of looking at the big picture, looking at all of the things. And I took a bunch of just tons of tests. And turns out there's lots of things going on in my body. I won't bore anyone with all of the details, but I'm on a bunch of weird supplements and enzymes and things that it just feels like I have a plan. Mm-hmm. And it feels good and hopeful to have a plan for the first time. Even if it may not work out completely, there are steps to take, and that feels good.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know sometimes our Western world falls short in many, many areas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Medicine is certainly one of them.
Yeah. Do you struggle with anxiety, depression, things like that?
I certainly am an over-anxious person. It's funny. I didn't really identify with that label, I think, until my dad died. Mm. But I think I had all the telltale symptoms or awarenesses. But I remember it was probably 6 months after my dad died, and my mom and I were talking, and she was like, you know, I think you might want to think about the word anxiety in your life. And I was like, what? Like, I deal with it. I'm not dealing with that. Like, that's not an issue. But, you know, the more self-awareness and self-reflection and therapy, it's like, oh, this is pretty present.
Yeah.
I think too, one of the side effects of losing someone unexpectedly is I go back and forth a lot about who's going to be next, and if someone's not answering the phone, where are they and what happened? Yeah. And so, you know, today I'm feeling pretty okay in that regard, but there's many ways to cope with the paranoia of losing people. And I think that's been more present.
Mm.
So
in your sort of coping and dealing with your loss, have you sought sort of groups, you know, other people who have kind of gone through the same thing?
Yes. It took me about a year and a half, but I joined a table at the dinner party. Are you familiar with that group?
I'm not. No, tell me about them.
So they are actually national, and they run different groups of 20 and 30 somethings who have lost someone significant. And they are really, really a fabulous organization. So you kind of meet informally around a kitchen table or having a potluck in a backyard, and you just share your story with people who are younger, which I really valued. I went to a bereavement group at like the hospice center, and I tried different church support groups. And most of the time I found myself sitting there with people who are a lot older. Mm-hmm. And not that their experience isn't valid, but there's just not a lot of parallels when you're sitting next to a woman in their 70s who has lost someone versus someone in their 20s or 30s.
Right, right.
So they're a fabulous organization. I'm actually going to speak at they're doing a camp, like a summer camp experience later this fall. So I will be there if you are going. I'd love to meet you.
Amazing. Where is that being held?
It's going to be in Wisconsin, I believe.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah. They have 15 spots left, I just found out. So
very cool.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Good for you.
Yeah. So that's been hugely helpful.
Do you feel a certain responsibility or do you take some of that on being someone who's gone through this loss and wanting to share with others like how you can process loss and you know, because one of the sort of amazing common running themes on this show, Katie, is people dealing with a thing, going through a trauma, going through a loss, mm-hmm. and then taking that loss and putting it into something like 52 Beautiful Things or whatever it may be. But I'm wondering if you like personally feel, you know, kind of like a calling or a, like a, maybe not a calling, maybe that's a little hyperbolic, but just like a, mm-hmm. a bit of responsibility.
I think the word responsibility is interesting. I definitely crave connection with people who get it. And I think one of the negative sides of being young and losing someone is very few people know how to either relate or support you in terms of a peer group. And so I guess part of my speaking about it is I want my story to help ease the pain of others if they're experiencing it as well. Mm-hmm. But then there is sort of this, I don't know, selfish element of, am I alone in this? Where can I build connection? How can I find other people who get it too? I'd say probably once a week, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is so vulnerable. I can't believe I have these things out there on the internet for people to read. Like, I don't want people who see me in the grocery store to know this about me. And then, you know, I swing back to, well, if my story can help one other person, then it's worth it. And I heard something really beautiful. I don't know if it was a quote or a meme or whatever, but may my scars be the roadmap for people walking this journey behind me. Mm. And I thought that's just such a really beautiful way of saying I have a choice to use my story to help others. But I don't say I feel a calling or a responsibility, but rather an opportunity.
Yeah. Well, I think the connection word is the right word here. Like, I think it's not selfish, you know. I think in connection is where we kind of grow and learn from each other, and I think we all need it.
Right.
And in that connection is when we learn about ourselves and allow others to learn from us. Mm-hmm. And that's really the beauty of connection. And I think, I feel like that's the common human purpose, but, you know.
Right.
I'm just a silly boy.
Well, and there's such a risk in being seen. And I think it goes back to vulnerability. And my question is, how much am I willing to be seen? And how much do other people want to see me? And that, you know, that question of anxiety too, it's like, oh gosh, what is the power of me showing up fully in this space? And I want to live that way, but it's a practice.
It's a practice and it's different for everyone. You know,
right.
for me, I've come to a point in my own mental health and recovery where, I share, you know, pretty much all of me. I mean, I'm not sharing my day to day, but I'm sharing all of my emotions, all of my mental health struggles. I'm an open book in that regard, only because I've learned that it has empowered myself and it has been a huge, the opening up has been such a huge part of my own healing and others. And I'm at the point where I love doing it. It kind of fuels me now.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, I understand that we're all on our own path, and I think no path is right or wrong. We're all, it's all different. It's all unique.
Right.
Yeah. What else, is there anything else you want to talk about in terms of seeking beauty? Actually, you know what? The thing about beautiful things and seeking out beauty is it takes practice, right? Can you help me and the listeners understand, like, for yourself, like, how do you get into the framework and the mindset of even finding the beauty? Because sometimes I know for myself, like, it's maybe hard to seek out sometimes, or it's hard to find, you know, like what helps you get in the space of even accessing that beauty?
Sure. I think it's the art of noticing. There are a lot of parallels to people who preach about seeking gratitude. And honestly, and maybe that's where I got my start. You know, lots of people right now are talking about what's on your gratitude list. And for me, it was people in my life and good food in my fridge, or, you know, I get cautious with this too, because there's such a socioeconomic slant to what does beauty look like. But so, you know, if you're struggling with where do I even start, I think it's sitting in a place where you feel safe, putting your feet on the ground, taking a few deep breaths, and starting with what you're thankful for. And then expanding, you know, look up, look across the street. What interactions are people having? Sometimes it can be as simple as water condensing on a glass, you know, like droplets at your feet. Start with your inner bubble and expand, and then see how you can interact in the world a little bit more. Mm-hmm. I think everyone has different definitions for what beautiful things are too. There's a lot of weight about, or there's a possible interpretation with beauty and vanity, and that's not really what I'm going for. So, you know, if a nice chandelier brings you joy, that's great. But I'm more thinking about the ordinary things in our imperfect world, mm-hmm. rather than grand gestures or expensive things.
Yeah, I'm very happy you said there's like the socioeconomic component of it. And there could be a racial component to it. There could be a diversity, sort of cultural, socioeconomic, et cetera, like component right. to it. And I think the things that you're pointing out intentionally and beautifully so are universal. Like these are things all humans can access, because mm-hmm. they're the small but potentially mighty.
Right.
Yeah, I love that. That's great.
Yeah, I'm always rooting for the underdog.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, let's transition into empathy heroes, shall we?
Sure.
This is the part of the show, listeners, where my guests and I talk about empathy heroes. Mention one or two, or however many my guest wants to mention, an empathy hero in our lives, someone who's just great at embracing empathy. Could be even a character from a book or a novel or what have you. I will go first to give you a moment, Katie, to think on your empathy hero.
Yeah.
My empathy hero this week is Ashley Kristoff and the folks over at The Mighty. The Mighty, listeners, is a great organization doing wonderful things in terms of just mental health advocacy, but specifically creating a community of feely humans, connecting and bringing people together around struggle, around pain and joy, and the things that we experience when we struggle with mental illness. And I was very grateful to be featured in a video called Check In With Me, Removing Our Layers, earlier this week. And I shared that on my blog at knownwells.com if anyone's interested in seeing that. But it's just a great video that Ashley, the video producer there at The Mighty, shot. And she was just really lovely to work with. And their office in Burbank is... there's more dogs than there are people, which lights me up and makes me happy, you know, and
yeah.
just awesome, awesome feely humans over there at The Mighty. So I just wanted to shout out them and call them as my empathy heroes this week.
Nice.
Yeah. How about you?
Well, it got a little panicky there, but thank you for that mental space.
Sure.
I think two come to mind right now. The first would be Sam Lamott, who has a project called Hello Humans. Hmm. And his goal, I think, is very similar to yours, Nan, is just how do we show up as people? And let's share our nitty gritty in attempting to make connection. So he has a blog and he does video interviews and a podcast. And he was one of the first people to feature my grief writing. So I was really thankful for that. I'm also thankful for the ladies who wrote the book Modern Loss. And
I just had Rebecca on the show.
Yeah, wonderful. I'm just really, really floored by her willingness to create a vulnerable space for people to connect. And their Facebook group has been immensely supportive. And I actually, on a personal note, just stopped following their threads. And I think that was a good mark of healing for myself of, I'm in the group. I know it's a place to share, and I don't need it to show up in my feed as much. Mm. So I guess that's a sign of progress. But Those two women are really brave and just really genuine in their experience. And I think, you know, going back to your question about responsibility, how can we use our stories to help others? Because they certainly didn't have to create that community, and it's been immensely supportive for me. So,
oh, that's so amazing to hear. Yeah, I really enjoy connecting with Rebecca. Recorded with her just last week, so
I'll have to take a listen.
That episode comes out. Yeah, well, thank you for sharing that. Those are some great empathy heroes.
Yeah.
Well,
that's a fun question.
Yeah, Katie, where can the listeners read 52 Beautiful Things and connect with you online and all that stuff?
Yep. So the blog is just 52beautifulthings.com. 52. And I also have a personal website, katiehuey.com. I'm on Instagram and Twitter. I would say definitely more active on Instagram at night. But yeah, I love talking to readers, and also am accepting guest posts. So if people want to share their experience with Beautiful Things, I'm happy to highlight that as well.
Very cool. And listeners, I'll make sure all of that is linked in the show notes for this episode over at umeempathy.com. Katie, thank you so much for being here and sharing your story and connecting over beauty.
Certainly. It's really been a pleasure.
Of course. And to you listeners, I'm here, you're here, we're here together on this wayward, overwhelming, awe-inspiring pale blue dot. We have each other. It's Yumi Empathy.